Okay, why don't we get going? As Senator Bach indicated on the floor, this is an informal committee hearing. The committee is not constituted for action during the special session, so it's obviously open to anybody who'd like to participate. We're going to have a few minutes overview from Mr. Kelly. Ms. Ida is not in town at this point, but Mr. Kelly will, as the deputy, will present an overview of the bill we have in front of us, Senate File 1, and then open it up for questions from members, discussion. Again, there will be no formal committee action on the bill. Would also indicate we've got other folks from the emergency office present, as well as people from MMB, and I believe there's some folks here from Hennepin County. I'm not sure about the other affected counties. But, Mr. Kelly, do you want to just start it off by just quickly going through the bill and how we got to what's in the draft?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, members, I'm Joe Kelly. I'm the Deputy Director for Homeland Security and Emergency Management at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And the purpose of my testimony today is to explain the requirement very quickly for the $4.5 million to provide the state match to the federal government's funding for disaster assistance to help Minnesota communities recover from the damage caused by the storms and floods of this past June. Beginning on June 20th, the persistent weather pattern brought multiple rounds of thunderstorms to our state. For nearly a week, regions of the state were continuously under severe weather watches and warnings. Every day, thunderstorms formed and swept through the area with torrential rainfalls, large hail, and damaging winds. At Benson in Swift County, straight-line winds were measured at 45 miles per hour, which are the equivalent of a Category 1 hurricane. Parts of the state saw rainfall amounts, 48-hour rainfall amounts, that have a statistical frequency of occurring about once every 500 years. These extreme rainfall rates caused flash flooding and mudslides, flooded and damaged roads and bridges, made travel hazardous, if not impossible. Thousands of mature trees were uprooted by the combination of strong winds and the saturated soils caused by repeated heavy rainfalls. At the peak, more than 600,000 homes and businesses were without electricity, making this the largest power outage in Minnesota history. Widespread road closures isolated whole communities until the water receded and the debris was cleared. The state emergency operations plan was activated on June 20th, and Governor Dayton declared a state of emergency on the 22nd. The effects of this storm stretched from Wilkin County in far west central Minnesota to Houston County in the southeast corner of the state. In all, 23 counties were impacted by the storm. Houston County in southeast Minnesota was hardest hit, with damages exceeding $339 per capita. After reviewing the initial damage assessments from the counties, Director Ida requested that FEMA send a team to Minnesota to participate in a formal preliminary damage assessment, or what we call the PDA. During the week of July 8th, joint state and federal teams fanned out across the impacted areas to assess the damage and determine if the scope of this disaster was beyond what Minnesota could manage without federal assistance. FEMA evaluates the financial impact of a disaster on two levels. To be eligible for a federal disaster declaration, the state must first exceed its uninsured damage indicator of $1.37 per capita, or a cumulative $7.266 million. Second, each affected county must exceed an indicator of $3.45 per capita to be designated. So for the state to be declared for a disaster, we have to exceed one threshold, and for counties to be designated to be included and eligible for disaster aid, they need to exceed an indicator as well. This PDA identified nearly $18 million in eligible damages, which is almost 2.5 times our state indicator. Based on the results of the PDA, Governor Dayton wrote a letter to President Obama requesting a major disaster declaration, and the President formally declared the disaster on July 25th. Federal disaster relief was approved for the state of Minnesota in two forms. The first is what we call public assistance, which is to help with the costs of debris removal, the emergency response, and repairs to public infrastructure. In the 18 designated counties, you recall I said 23 were impacted. 18 of those 23 exceeded their damage indicator. The second form of federal disaster relief is hazard mitigation, which can be applied on a statewide basis. The federal government agrees to pay 75% of actual eligible expenses on a reimbursement basis. State and local governments are responsible for the remaining 25%. So for this disaster, the non-federal share is estimated at $4.5 million. To date, FEMA and public safety staff have gone out into the counties, out into the communities, presented briefings to potential applicants for disaster assistance, and facilitated requests for public assistance. Then we've conducted kickoff meetings to work with those who are applying for aid to begin what we call the project formulation process. Future actions include completing these projects, collecting documentation and receipts, making payments to the communities, closing out each project, and ultimately closing out the assistance program for this disaster. To put this in context, Minnesota has received 19 major disaster declarations since 2000, including 6 in the last 3 years. The cumulative financial burden of these events has strained local government budgets. Since 2007, the legislature has decided to pay the full 25% share. We believe that the $4.5 million non-federal share will be adequate to match the 75% federal reimbursement. Mr. Chair, I stand for questions.
Thank you. And Mr. Kelly, can you just offer a couple of comments on Section 3 of the bill, the reappropriation for Bach Nobles Worthington?
Mr. Chair, members, that provision is a reduction of an appropriation that was passed by the legislature in the 2012 special session. It was appropriated as state augmentation, if you will, to the federal debris removal programs that normally come with the disaster declaration. $250,000 was appropriated under Chapter 12A. To this point in time, we've only received just under 31,000 requests for reimbursement of expenses that would be eligible under that appropriation. And because all those debris removal expenses, it was intended to reimburse homeowners who had gotten ahead of the community and had paid to have someone remove their debris, because later on that debris removal would have been at no cost to them. So there is, in effect, the number that you see there, about $219,000 remaining in that appropriation that we do not feel there is a need for under the state law to which it was first appropriated.
Okay, thank you. And then before we have questions, a discussion on the part of the committee, Mr. Nauman, could you just go through the spreadsheet and how we arrive at the dollars that are in the bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and members. Welcome back. It's good to see you all. The spreadsheet is the color document, 8.5 by 11 on landscape format. It's one of our more straightforward spreadsheets that this committee wrestles with. Line 2 shows the public assistance, state and local FEMA match. This is the $4.5 million or the 25% associated with the disaster declaration that Mr. Kelly just spoke of. The lines 6, 7, and 8 are appropriations to the Department of Employment and Economic Development in the form of local grants, $60,000 each for Nobles and Rock County, and those are specified in the language of the bill. And then an appropriation of $99,000 to the city of Worthington for a total of $219,000. Members, I'll speak to line 15 next because it sort of goes in conjunction with lines 6 through 8. A reduction – members will recall that in Chapter 141, at the conclusion of last session, an appropriation was made to the Department of Public Safety in the amount of $250,000 for that specific disaster. It was federal disaster DR-4113. So this is down in Senator Weber's area. And you'll notice on line 15 there is a reduction of $219,000. So those two pieces work in conjunction with each other. That's Section 3 of the bill. It's both an appropriation as well as a reduction to that appropriation that was made at the end of last session. Similarly, lines 12 through 14 are reductions to previous disaster appropriations that were made during the 2012 special session, and we can get into more detail about those. The summary that you have in front of you identifies specifically that two of them, lines 12 and 14, are public safety reductions, some of which is match, some of which is other the $2 million. There were two pieces of that bill, and one was there were two disasters, and $5.8 million was appropriated to the northern Minnesota region that was affected by some windstorms as well. The department has evaluated and determined that $2 million of that appropriation can be repurposed in this bill. Then there's $1.7 million of money that was appropriated to the larger disaster in the Duluth and Duluth region. $1.7 million is reduced from those deemed appropriate for repurposing. So then you'll notice that the bill on line 18 is tracked at a zero net levy impact or net general fund effect. So there is no overall cost to the bill. So the dollars that are being appropriated are being reduced in other places. The remaining lines 21 through 32 are just summaries of various different ways to look at the bill. So there's, again, pretty straightforward, $4.7 million of appropriation on line 24 in the general fund, reductions of 4.7 on line 25. Then if you look on an agency-by-agency basis, there's some transfers between appropriations, in other words, costs that are being reduced in the Department of Employment and Economic Development and higher appropriations in public safety, although those are net numbers and their dollars going both directions.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and Mr. Nauman, just a couple things. Did you mention the $800,000 is one question? And the second question is, it's my understanding that some of this will cancel anyways at the end of this calendar year. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's at the end of this current biennium.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nauman, it's the money that was appropriated to the Minnesota Division of Employment and Economic Development, the deed money there, that will cancel on 31 December 2013. The money from the public safety line, Section 3, the $800,000 on your spreadsheet, that money does not expire.
Mr. Nauman, the $800,000?
Mr. Chair and members, that's $800,000. That's the match that was done in the 2012 session, similar to the kind of money that you're contemplating appropriating the 4.5 in this session. So it's the 75-25 match that we did during the 2012 session.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is for Mr. Kelly or Mr. Nauman, but Leech Lake has a couple of invoices that I think were potentially in some of this money. And I just want to make sure that there's enough money left in the funds after these unallotments to still be able to pay for the Leech Lake appropriations.
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct. That there we are aware of the Leech Lake Tribe's project, if you will. We have reserved, we have set aside about $185,000 based on the information that we've received from them, and we're working with the tribe. So that That money has already been set aside in order to free up $2 million. We're also in conversations very recently here with Clearwater County as well. So we have reserved money for all the things that we know about, and there is still $2 million, a little bit more than $2 million available. So, okay. Yes, we are aware of that requirement.
Okay. Are there questions from that? Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kelly, can you maybe you can take us through, or maybe Mr. Nauman would have to do this, as to how the dollars come back to the state of Minnesota, the federal dollars, how long that takes. And of the hazard mitigation money, you said there's some money being used for hazard mitigation. How much of this $4.5 million is used for hazard mitigation?
Mr. Chair, Senator, none of this $4.5 will be part of the hazard mitigation opportunity that Minnesota has. For every disaster you have, you get an additional, if you have a current hazard mitigation program in your state, you get an additional 15% on top of that. So in this case, it's going to be somewhere between $2.5 and $3 million. There's a local match requirement, but there's no state match. That's not what we're asking for today. So none of the 4.5, to answer your question directly, Senator, will be used for hazard mitigation. It will all be used for reimbursement of disaster assistance. Regarding the timing of the money, I believe the federal money should begin flowing, and we would have the ability to make payments probably starting in October. So next month, Senator.
Okay.
And the money comes to the state of Minnesota, comes to public safety, to our division as a grant, and then we subgrant it down to the affected counties and other political subdivisions.
Senator Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some kind of basic questions on when a disaster occurs, all of the communities that are in the proposed legislation, have they been declared presidential disasters, or are they something other?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think the effect is yes. They have been designated as counties in a declared state for a specific event. So they are named in the president's disaster declaration as being eligible for federal aid.
Mr. Chairman, when that occurs, if you could just clarify or go over, then FEMA is involved. If that's, I believe, FEMA gets involved as a certain percentage of damages occur, and my understanding is that not all of these communities really qualified for that, or did they?
Mr. Chair, Senator, all of the communities communities inside the counties that were designated in this disaster are eligible applicants for disaster aid. We do it at the count. They're designated at the county level. There were the difference between the 23 impacted and the 18 designated. There were five counties that, following FEMA guidelines, did not have sufficient damage to qualify for federal assistance, the 75% reimbursement.
And Mr. Chairman, just a couple more questions here. When FEMA reimburses 75%, and then the state and local share is 25%.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct.
And you mentioned earlier that since 2007,
you hear the bill.
The state has picked up 100% of the state and local share.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct. It's been a 25-0 split in Minnesota. The legislature has decided to pay the full non-federal share of the state match. It varies across the country. Some places it's 25-0, 15-10, 12.5, 12.5. The history here in Minnesota since 2000 if you want to go back even a little further, is that for the majority of disasters, the legislature has decided to pick up the full 25%.
Since 2000 or 2007?
Since 2007, we have you have decided to pick up the full share. Since 2000, I believe there, out of those 19 disasters, there have been six that the locals were required to pay the 10%. So since 2007, all of them, since 2000, six of the 19.
So, Mr. Chairman, it seems like we, the legislature, are establishing a pretty firm future that the state will pick up the 25% federal match, or 25% of the match, which is classified as state and local.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that has been that is the precedent over the last 6 years. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, just a couple questions. You talked about the state indicator and the county indicators. Can you just discuss that a little more with us? And do those numbers change, or have they been that way for a long time? And then I'm looking at kind of the counties that were hit, and it hits eight of my eight counties, but then it skips to the Hennepin County, and there seems to be some gaps in between if the storms lessened in those counties and then resurged in Hennepin County, or how would some of those counties get missed in declaration and others not? Just interested to explore that indicator and any thoughts you have.
Mr. Chair, Senator, those damage indicators, those cost indicators are updated annually by the federal government. They're based on the consumer price index and other mathematical formulas, but they are current. They're updated on an annual basis. They're provided to us for both the state and the county. How counties get skipped is really a reflection of how much damage they suffered. Some counties simply did not suffer damage and incur costs. An interesting one is on the southern border where if you start at Houston County on the far southeast and you go all the way to the center with Faribault County, all those counties were included except Maurer County, because Maurer County just simply did not report or have enough damage. So, you know, weather being weather, Senator, I think it skipped around and the damages were not uniform. But we did reach out to all of the counties in what we thought was the affected area and asked them to provide initial damage assessments.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, so those numbers are dictated or decided by FEMA and the federal government, and then it's applied in Minnesota the same as it is in Iowa and Florida and Illinois and other states, I mean, similarly.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The community that I represent did get hit very hard. I represent parts of Hennepin County, and I remember the day of the storm driving down a road and having big, you know, electrical wires crossing the road, and you know, it's just very dangerous. And so, number one, I would thank Xcel in particular for the work they did to make travel safe and to help our communities get back on the grid and help our cities with those situations. And our local police and fire really did a tremendous job making sure nobody got hurt. One of the things I've been concerned with in this process, Mr. Kelly, is some gaps in information and response process. For the first time since I've been in the legislature, the school districts that I represent have suffered substantial damage that they qualify for a match, and yet it doesn't appear that there is yet a streamlined process for those school districts to make sure their applications get filed properly, that The county gets that information. I've talked to the folks at Hennepin County, which also have done a great job, but they've been working with those school districts, and they still haven't applied. So, for example, Wayzata sustained $450,000 worth of damage, and yet they don't have an application in. So I raise this point because, as I understand it, I've since learned that DPS is reaching out to them, and we're doing our best to make sure that comes in. But tell us about the process if some of these school districts, and I know Osteo is another one that didn't submit an application. I didn't see that. I couldn't say whether the others in Hennepin. I didn't think Minneapolis did, for example. I don't know. But what if their applications come in after the fact? Will there be a process for you to honor those applications?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it is unusual. This is a bit of an anomaly for this event that we've had, the challenge that we've had getting the school districts' numbers. Their process is to, like any other applicant within the county, that if they believe they have damages, to go to the county emergency management office and request assistance. We're trying to, and I don't know if it was because of the summer time recess. It's very strange to us. So we have kind of redoubled our efforts to reach out to the school districts. We've got the county emergency management directors on one aspect. We're going back to the Minnesota Department of Education, who has had reports of damages, and we are reaching out to all those parties, trying to close in and make sure that we're tracking on all schools. We're currently tracking 14 independent school districts. A number of them, Senator, are in your district. Wayzata and Minneapolis and Orono are among those that we're tracking. They have not yet, you are correct, Senator, they have not yet submitted a request for public assistance. We have the ability to go in and reopen the application period. And the FEMA, the senior FEMA officer, the federal coordinating officer on site here in St. Paul, is aware that we are working this issue with the school districts, and we're confident that between us and the counties and the Department of Education that we'll be able to, for lack of a more graceful term, take care of all those counties that or all those school districts that have eligible damages.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, thank you very much for doing that and for your flexibility. Is there a drop-dead date by which they'd be too late that we ought to have in our minds?
Mr. Chair, Senator, not really. I think we're probably in the reasonableness stage, and because we are working and the counties are working hard with reaching out one more time, I would imagine that the application process should be completed within the next 30 days. So I think we're going to be okay, Senator.
Very good. Thank you very much for doing that.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kelly, you've indicated by way of testimony that this storm that we are dealing with created the largest power outage in the history of the state of Minnesota. I happen to represent a number of rural counties, one of which was at the working group, the Meeker County or Meeker Cooperative Electrical, came to the working group seeking some assistance from the state because of damage to their facilities, and it's my understanding, and I'm just looking for you to confirm or corroborate whether I'm right or wrong, that under federal guidelines, rural cooperatives are eligible for federal assistance, but under Minnesota law, rural cooperatives are not eligible for assistance, whereas municipal power companies are eligible for both federal and state assistance. Mr. Kelly, is my understanding of that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, your understanding is indeed correct. And the distinction, I guess, is that the not-for-profit, the private nonprofit and municipal-owned utilities are recognized under FEMA as being eligible for disaster relief the way our state statute, Chapter 12A, specifically 12A.15 is written, it says that state appropriations may be used to pay all or a portion of the local share, the 25% for federal funds, for political subdivisions. So in order to be eligible under the state the state law that addresses disaster relief, you have to be a political subdivision or owned by one. That's why the municipal power companies, the city Power and Light, is covered, but a rural electric cooperative is not. So your understanding is very accurate, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up comment to what Mr. Kelly has confirmed. I would indicate to the committee that the Meeker County or the Meeker Cooperative Electrical has over 7,500 customers in Meeker County, McLeod County, Stearns County, Kandiyohi County, and they did indeed sustain a good deal of damage to their facilities, and they did try to obtain relief in this special session, and it was determined that they were not eligible. I want to bring that to the attention of the committee. I intend to bring that to the attention of the Senate as a whole when we reconvene. I do understand the reasons. I understand the public policy is not being changed in this disaster relief bill, but I really do question the equities here, and I truly do not see a whole lot of difference between a rural nonprofit cooperative and a municipal power company, other than one provides power to people who live within a city, and the other provides power to folks who live in the country. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gabrielson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a point of clarity, Mr. Kelly, I'm a little tad bit confused knowing the emergency management system a little bit in Minnesota. And Senator Cohen will certainly attest that I don't get confused very easy. But take me through the process of you working with school districts individually, and why a county emergency management director wouldn't be doing that within that jurisdiction. Did I miss that someplace? Or if Hennepin County has a bunch of schools that are school districts that have had some issues, and I understand that, wouldn't you be working directly with the emergency management director in your function as a DPS, or would you be working directly with the school? Where is the county emergency management director lost in that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I apologize if I confused you, because that is exactly what we are doing, is we are working with the county emergency management directors and encourage them to go back and provide that outreach to the schools in their county, because we don't ever want to get out of our lane, out of our responsibility, and we want to make sure that those school districts are working with their county emergency management directors. So what I tried to say and may have misspoken was, We're trying to get with the counties and the Department of Education to make sure that we close in and account for all of the school districts. We do a bit of general public outreach ahead of our applicant briefing, saying, "Hey, if you think that you're an eligible applicant and you think you have damages that you should receive assistance with, please come to this meeting on this day." But no, sir, we will work through the county emergency management directors to account for all those school districts.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Are there further questions or comments from the committee? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, just kind of a follow-up to Senator Bonhoeff and Ingebrigtsen. And our communities, I mean, it's in place. You've been in communication with many of the counties, and once we pass this and reallocate the funds, my understanding, and just verify this, that the system is in place as they have had the expenses or still incur expenses. You'll be working with them to make them aware of this and help them with some of the reimbursements, as will the federal funds that will flow because of the special session. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is indeed correct. We will continue to work with all the counties and all the eligible applicants in FEMA to make sure that everybody that is eligible for disaster aid receives what they're looking for. It is a complicated process, and it unfolds over a significant period of time. But we work very closely, again, in the key partnership, as highlighted by Senator Ingebretson, is working with those county emergency management directors because they know their communities, they know their counties better than we do. But, yes, we will do everything we can to make sure that that disaster aid is provided. Our mission is to help Minnesota communities recover from disasters as well as prepare for and respond to. But we take that very seriously, and we do not want to leave any eligible community behind.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, yeah. If we wouldn't have had this session, what would have the path been? Would have this just been delayed reimbursement? And to that end, I assume we've gotten most things, but let's just say Maurer County, for example, does come up with other costs, and they just hadn't reported them. And I don't want to pick on Maurer for any reason other than just an example. Could we address those issues in a future session if there's been things that have been overlooked or not included or unexpected reports of stuff we don't know about right now? And any thoughts on that? And
Senator Westrom, maybe I could just jump in. There are a couple things. There have been concerns raised. Senator Newman had his question about the rural cooperatives, for instance. But my expectation is that because this is a smaller disaster than we've had recently, and there were some questions as to whether or not we could have done this in the absence of a special session. I don't know if Senator Boggs is going to talk about this on the floor, but I think the legislative leaders felt that there was possibly not the need for a special session. As I understand it, I think management and budget felt that there was the need for statutory authority. And I think the upshot of this is that during the session next year, we'll probably have a chance to consider either some reformation or some changes to how we've handled disaster relief, as well as taking a look at some of the areas that are not covered. But, Mr. Kelly, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, not having the special session would have indeed had the effect that you described, which is to delay the money, the state portion of this, flowing to the counties, which I think is important in this case because a lot of the damage or a lot of the costs associated with this came with the debris removal and the emergency response parts. So the communities have already paid for those. They've paid those bills, and they're unanticipated expenses. So there are a number of communities that have a cash flow issue of which this special session should reduce. Just a comment about Maurer County, because you brought it up, Senator. One of the reasons why Maurer County didn't sustain very much damage is because they've had a very good hazard mitigation program, and they have flood-proofed, to use a clumsy term, they have made excellent use of available resources to make sure their communities are not impacted by floods as severely as they were in the past. So that's a good news story and why Maurer County isn't there. However, to take your question, if in the future, as time unfolds and we find a county that was not one of these 18 designated counties, we have the ability to go back to FEMA and to make an appeal. Of course, that appeal has to be justified and has to be documented, but we have the ability, again, working with the federal coordinating officer at FEMA, to add another county to be designated under this declaration. So everybody, I think, at emergency management at the county, at the state, and the federal government is trying very hard to make sure we don't leave anybody behind, and we have the ability to correct the record or catch up those communities and counties that may not have yet been part of this disaster.
Very good. Thank you.
Further, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelly, I just want to thank you and your office. Your team did a tremendous job in working with our counties. I represent southeastern Minnesota, who was hit relatively hard, especially Houston and Fillmore counties. And I also want to extend my gratitude to our local officials throughout the state. I can't speak for other counties, but I know the folks in Winona, Houston, and Fillmore counties were out there on the ground, the emergency management folks, the county engineers, city, county, township staff, they were out on the ground, if not during the storm, shortly thereafter, getting back to work, restoring those areas for their citizens. So thank you to you and your team, and thank you to our local officials throughout the state.
Thank you. Further comments or questions from the committee? Okay. If not, Mr. Kelly, thank you very much. And members, again, this committee is not officially constituted, so there's no action needed. So I think, oh, I'm sorry, Senator Weber, I'm sorry.
There were a few comments made I'd care, like to respond to if
certainly.
I might. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Weber, Senator from District 22. Just a couple of things that came up in the discussion, and with my area having went through a disaster declaration earlier this year, just a few follow-up comments I would like to make. First, it was talked about the precedent or practice of the state assuming the 25% state and local share, actually making it a state share, per se. And I just want to highlight the fact that by no means does that mean that local communities are made whole. Actually, there has been much discussion in some of the communities in my district that suffered from the ice storm in April. And actually has been some requests made as it relates to additional funds. For example, the city of Worthington has about between $900,000 and $1 million of unmet needs as a result of uncovered damages from the ice storm. Actually, there was some confusion earlier on. There was some indication that there would be a request made for them. Legislative leadership indicated there would be no additional money. And Nobles County and Rock County also had some monies that were or expenses that were not covered. I certainly am appreciative that the balance of the original $250,000 portion that was approved this spring has been reformulated and that money will actually get out to the counties and to the city of Worthington. But I want to assure everyone that there is no way that communities are made whole when the state picks up that 25% share. And quite frankly, I would have been willing to ask for that additional money had I thought there was a real opportunity for it to be done. Because for the city of Worthington, having $900,000 of unmet need and a total levy capacity of about $3 million, it is a hardship. And it is difficult for them to achieve that. And part of it is obviously the rules under which they have to play. You know, their cost to deal with damage to public trees, for example, you can cut off the limbs that were there, and but you cannot, by the time they got done with the severity of the damage that they had, with every branch being covered with 3 inches of ice, even branches the size of my little finger, you can imagine what many of those trees looked like. And so by the time they got done trimming, there really wasn't a tree left to salvage. But under FEMA rules, the cost of cutting the rest of that tree down, the cost of getting rid of that tree, the cost of taking out the stump, the cost of replacing that tree are not covered items. I think also with our REAs, another factor, we thought originally that under the federal declaration that our REAs would be covered. However, all of a sudden a rule showed up from FEMA that, well, if they didn't have a previous disaster plan in place, they would not be covered by with his money. So they're having to absorb a lot of these costs that they had themselves. And I think even the confusion early on with our cities, FEMA representatives said, well, both because of the severity of it, both the regular hours, overtime hours would be covered. Well, then the rules finally got determined, well, no, it would only be overtime hours, even though it's my understanding that the federal law says regular and overtime hours. So I think that's obviously a federal issue, and we in this body cannot do anything. But I think that it is important that we work with our federal officials to do clarification of some of these laws. And I think even it's good for us to look at within our state organization and say, where do sometimes our agency rules and requirements basically differ from the law that has actually been approved by the legislature? And so I just wanted to make those comments on the basis of what I heard discussed here this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I recognize that there was an additional request from from the affected areas. And that's why I suggest that I think, given the size of this bill, unlike, say, the bill last year for
right.
Northeastern Minnesota, which was, $150, $200 million, that it's clear there are things falling through the cracks. And that's why my best guess is that during next year's session, there'll be some attempt to address some of these concerns, both potentially, depending on where money is, in terms of support as well as policy changes, I think, or corrections. So thank you.
Thank you.
So if there are no other questions or comments, again, the plan is to go back to the floor and take up the bill and then hopefully adjourn. So thank you, members.
We'll work a bunch, right?